You know, Dave, I'm sensing a little hostility.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 9, Episode 25, Agony. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunte.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. Before we get into this extremely uncheery episode, I have a little pod business, if I may.
Please.
If you are wondering to yourself, why haven't I heard about the results of the cookie cutter giveaway yet? It is because we are recording like 17 of these in advance so that we can relax over the holiday, New Year, Feast of the Epiphany, Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. So we still have not even seen your entries because you haven't even heard the episode yet in our timeline. This is starting to sound like an episode of Lost and not Again.
I was going to say The Good Place, but either way.
Sure. So get yourself a mug of clam chowder from the fountain in the center of town. And we will definitely, the next time you hear our voices, we will have some results for you, I hope. But if you're wondering what is going on with that, we didn't forget. We're just recording way ahead of time.
Hello, lawsuit.
I think we said that when we announced the contest, but yes, never a bad idea to remind people that, yeah, we didn't just flake on this as we have been known to flake on things at time to time in our lives. Speaking of flaky, let's start with our C plot.
You're welcome.
Steve photography stuff. At the beat, Janet hangs up the phone and excitedly tells Steve when he asks that one of her old boyfriends just won an OB. Steve pretends to know what that is. In case you also don't know, it's the Tony for off-Broadway shows. Just then, Miles Caulfield, senior art critic for the Chronicle / fucking hottie, walks in to ask who took the photo that accompanies the story Oscar for ex-porn star. Before we get into it, yes, I cut a picture of Miles because Foxy. Steve dodges, asking why Miles wants to know. Miles wants to publish it in an anthology of Best Photos LA. And Janet keeps trying to talk Miles out of using it, but he's very into it in clip two.
It's an action shot. You know, it was taken in the moment.
But that's what makes it so impressive. I mean, the angle, the composition, light. Whoever took this is an artist.
Steve Sanders, artist in residence.
Okay.
It is kind of a good shot. You can see it in the visual aids.
It's not good enough to necessitate an entire subplot, but this is how Steve and Janet live now. So here we all are.
It's true. So Steve is so psyched about Miles' praise and request to see more of his work that he has gone inside a sewer to photograph it. He has also bought a better camera since we saw him shooting the separated guy with that Walgreens number a few weeks ago. And also gotten himself a like war zone utility vest with a million fucking pockets and stuff. So dumb.
Oh, God.
Anyway, then this nonsense occurs. Clip three.
You said you did this all the way through college?
Yeah, I remember reading an article by Jackson Pollock.
Oh, from the 50s. Action painting.
He said his style was influenced by road trips his family would take when he was a kid. His father would stop along the roadside to relieve himself and spatter rocks.
And that's how modern art was changed forever.
Well, you gotta have a muse, right? I've got mine.
Well, he means Janet, so that's sweet.
Yeah.
But, I was like, at this point in the story, I was mad that they were acting like this was something that Steve did in college. There's a reveal coming, but we'll discuss it when we get to it. At this point, it's all fucking preposterous. But anyway, then Steve sees a kid riding a bike on a narrow ledge, takes off after him shooting all the while, and soon trips, falls down a hill, and comes up with a mouthful of grass. Hardy har har. Cough. And of course, when Matt enlists Steve on Janet's recommendation to take evidence photos for a case, which we will get to, Steve doesn't even remember to take the lens cap off and admits that he made up all that stuff about being a serious photographer in college so that he could impress Janet. Now, this makes sense, but at the same time, they've been so retconny about their past collectively of all of the characters that existed before this season that, like, it also wouldn't have surprised me if the answer was like, oh, yeah, no, that was something that Steve was interested in college. We just never showed it.
Yeah. I mean, anyway. Once they did that thing with Brandon's first day of school, it was like, I guess anything goes in terms of what they think we think happened in the past.
Right. Right. So anyway, Matt knows more about F-stops than Steve does, which is anything. But he still needs Steve to point out the CC camera that's mounted in the corner. Again, we'll come back to it. So then Miles returns to the beat office to look at Steve's latest prints and hear Steve's latest artsy bullshit, including an empty frame he hung on the wall to frame it. Cough. It's really dumb. Miles tells Steve to keep his day job and apparently is no longer interested in the original photo either. Janet tries to buck Steve up until he admits that he got the photo of the porn star after he tripped over a bellhop chasing her. He had dropped the camera and it took the shot by itself. Good job, camera.
I'll say.
She kisses him for being honest eventually and tells him her ex's play was about what sheep think about when they're in line waiting to be slaughtered. She says this like dismissively, but like, I'd see that show.
Especially, anyway, well, it depends on the costumes.
True. Good point. And she saves the shot that he took of her, which, I mean, you have to forgive so much when you're dating Steve. But Lindsay Price almost makes it believable. Yeah. Almost.
Almost.
On to the B plot. Donna chooses her. Noah comes to see Donna in her dumb hair, which you can see in the visual aids, to tell her he has figured out that her refusal to move in with him is actually a test for her to see how committed he is to her. And he's so committed that he got them the house. Is he really in a position to move out of the rent-stabilized Walsh house? I doubt it.
What?
What is his credit rating? Does he have one? This is dumb. So Donna has to tell him she really doesn't want them to move in together. Noah makes a really dumb face, which is fitting because her reason is dumb and not credible in clip 4.
Because I read this study on couples that live together, and they were 46% more likely to divorce than couples who never lived together before they got married.
You're telling me you don't move in right now because you're afraid we're going to get divorced?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Come on, what's the real reason?
That I feel we're moving too fast.
After a year and a half.
I'm sorry, that's how I feel.
Really? This is how I feel, okay? Either we do this, we should call it quits. Okay?
Someone help Vincent Young. Help him. They're not talking about whether to get frozen yogurt or real ice cream. They're talking about breaking up.
Yeah. Also, Donna did not read a study. let's just state that for the record, too.
Would you say their relationship is on a rocky road?
Yeah. So we will get to Kelly's whole awful storyline and how insensitive Donna is about it. But for now, Donna wants boy advice. Clip 5.
Exactly how many guys have you slept with?
Donna.
Well, what? Dylan, Brandon, Colin, Matt.
Is there a point to this?
Wayne. I think I want to have sex with him.
So have it.
Yeah, but every guy you've been with, it's been something serious, and same with me.
And what, you don't take Wayne seriously?
I don't know. He's a beach volleyball player. He's fly by night. But he's so cute.
I'm not really sure what you're asking me.
I'm asking about casual sex. Is it wrong?
There is no such thing as casual sex.
I mean, given that this character and how we sort of get into her more serious, less like popular mean girl side in season one, is it the sleepover where she basically says that Ross guy kind of like raped her? Wasn't it retconned at the reunion that Ross basically raped her and didn't even use a blanket?
Yep.
And her whole thing in high school was that she had, quote, a rep.
Yeah.
Show Bible, write one, consult it. Too late.
Mm-hmm. Also, on behalf of beach volleyball players, I resent Donna saying that they're fly by night.
Yeah, that's not what that expression even means, but also, who cares?
Yes. On the phone, Donna and Wayne are having a very mature conversation in clip 6.
I went on a trip And on this trip, in my suitcase, I packed a hairbrush, a pogo stick, sunblock, an elephant.
An Indian elephant.
Are you writing this down?
Not a word.
Because this is a memory game, so if you're cheating.
A butterfly necklace.
Was that on the list?
No, but you were wearing it the day we met.
Is that you or me?
It's me.
You want to get it?
Nope. So tell me, what else do you remember?
Oh, God. Okay, so Donna is lying on her stomach on her bed, like her ankles crossed over her back with fucking pigtails. Like, we already knew she was a dumb baby. You don't have to hit it this hard.
No, you really don't.
And of course, the call she's ignoring is from Noah.
The Sean Christian delivery, again, is that weird, like, he always has this, okay, look on his face. But then the accompanying tone is almost sarcastic. Like, I assume, since he made a living in daytime, that his flirtatious banter renditions got better. But who knows?
Indeed. So then Wayne can't believe he's managed to get Donna to his place for dinner, which is a picnic in front of the stupid improbable fire. Little does he know, the price is an embarrassing conversation in clip 7.
People do this, right? They hook up, no promises, no ties.
Well, some do, but if you don't want to...
No, wait. I do. It's just kind of new to me.
So then I should have clipped this part too, but his answer to that is new is good. Like, no, she's not saying she's going to do anal, buddy. Like, this is something else.
Yeah.
Anyway, they start noisily kissing, which she breaks off to his slight frustration. She thinks maybe she needs a little more time. He says he's leaving for Acapulco tomorrow for a tournament before clarifying that he's asking her to come with him. She asks how many girls he's taken to Acapulco, which, new euphemism alert. And instead of answering, he says that if she doesn't want to go, he understands. She does, but she's confused. And he's fine with it and says he'll take her home. And the next day, Wayne finds Donna in the parking lot at the Peach Pit. LOL, that he's known her long enough to know this is one of two places that she ever goes. To apologize for the night before. But she says she thinks she was giving mixed signals. He thinks he pushed things too far. She asks him to give her a little more time. And then Noah inside tries to kiss up to Donna by giving her a box of cheap wine glasses he remembers she wanted. This is supposed to be a big deal because she knows he hates to shop, like walking into a store and buying one item that, by the way, is like $26 is not a big gesture, but fine. Anyway, he wants to know if she's changed her mind about the house, even though this is the first they've seen each other since she told him it wasn't a test. And surprise, she has not changed her mind. Wah, wah. Also, for the record, you know, it's not the price of a gift that matters, but this is wine glasses. Like, it's not meaningful.
No.
Shut up, Noah.
Also, they're completely generic. Like,
also, the box is not even like fully closed when he hands it to her, like just the box, not wrapped or in a gift bag, even like, yeah, this, like, is not trying
that out of someone's trunk at the diner. What are you doing?
On to our A plot. Gina's under four kinds of pressure while Kelly has PTSD, and we are really going to try not to be bitches about it. Once again, much as we did last week, we're just going to say this storyline all revolves around Kelly being sexually assaulted. So, content warning, if you want to bail at this point, we do not blame you. Even if this is not something that is triggering for you, if you want to bail, as ever, we do not blame you.
Yeah.
So at Cedars, a beat up Kelly is being peppered with questions by a nurse and a cop, feeling like other patients are glaring at her in judgment as she describes her attack. She blames herself for not running, but the cop sternly says it's not her fault, and the nurse assures her that the officer has handled hundreds of rape cases, including the nurse's own, which, yikes. The next step is a rape exam, and they make sure Kelly knows how invasive the process is going to be before she agrees to do it, but she says she will. And then Dylan shows up at the apartment looking for Kelly. Gina, unfortunately, is the one who opens the door, and she's disgusted that he's there looking for not her, whereupon he explains why it's alarming that Kelly never showed up to meet him earlier, but Gina doesn't care, which, you know, she doesn't know what happened, so that's reasonable, and refuses to agree to pass on his messages to Kelly when she does show up. Back to the hospital, Kelly goes through the hell of detailing her personal sexual history as part of her rape exam, and the nurse closes by giving her a card with Rain's rape crisis number, which she reads out. It's 800-656-HOPE. By the way, that is still the number, which is, you know, remarkable. I mean, sad that in 20 years they still have to exist, but we'll link it in the show notes because good for the show for actually doing some public service. Before the nurse leaves, Kelly has one last question. Clip 8.
When this happened to you, was the guy ever caught?
No, he wasn't. The doctor's about to start, though. You should get ready.
Wait, was that? Was that real?
Disgusted.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, wow. It was real.
Yikes.
Like, first of all, there's like the drum line percussion in the first part of the clip.
Yeah.
And then there's the like Dylan sexy guitar. And then there's the inappropriate smash into the credits. Like, guys, no, you can't just do that. You really can't.
No. I mean, I hope there's never one more inappropriate than that, but Jesus Christ, it had to be memorialized because what the fuck?
Yeah, that's grim. I mean,
like, I think after the
David,
I think after the one where she got shot, like they just slammed into one where it was like a thrum and not like not the song.
Right.
But yeah. Oof, God. Anyway, moving on from that horror, a clearly traumatized Kelly staggers home in the sweats that the hospital provided because she had to give them her clothes. And Donna yammers on about her Noah issues and does not even notice that Kelly is clearly going through something until Kelly turns and Donna sees that she has a cut on her lip. Kelly lies badly that she slipped on one of Aaron's toys. And Donna, uncharacteristically oblivious, says she doesn't think she can handle work right now. So can Kelly just cover for her? And assumes the answer is yes and leaves without Kelly answering at all. And Kelly then goes into the shower and takes a long one and cries. Gina is hanging out with Donna with David in his dumb booth while he eats a sandwich and exposits about her return to skating to fill in for a certain Tess Goody. Gina self-deprecatingly jokes about having to leave all her great friends in LA to do it if she makes the cut, and the Wire report David just read has motivated her to go to practice. So then Donna shows up late to the store. Kelly says it was a madhouse and that she threw people out and asks Donna to take over for a while. And she's out in the courtyard getting a coffee when Dylan finally shows up to ask her what happened. She vaguely says that something came up and he fails to pick up on her body language or visible contusions before launching into this. Clip 9.
Kel, you're my best friend, okay? I mean, I called you. I said I was thinking about using heroin. And when you guys have these little interventions, you say you'd do anything. That you'd walk through fire to be there for me.
I would.
Well, then why didn't you?
I was raped.
I mean, I hate to put it this way or sort of look at the scene through this lens, but Dylan is being such a cramp that I kind of felt good about her being able to be like, I was actually walking through fire in a sense.
Yeah.
When I was being sexually assaulted in an alley in a pile of garbage. So why don't you change your fucking tone? And P.S. he never really does.
Doesn't. He's
like,
he's really awful.
Face. Oh,
yeah.
Horrible. And has he had a haircut? No, he hasn't.
No, he hasn't. So he hugs her and tells her she's going to be fine while she flashes back to the attacker showing her his knife. Yikes. At the not courthouse, Matt is trying to argue down a breaking and entering charge on a client's behalf, but the evidence against him seems strong. And what do you know? Matt's client, Joe, is the rapist. Dun, dun, dun.
His name is Joe Patch. What is with these names?
Don't know.
Lily Samples, Joe Patch.
I don't know.
I don't either.
So David comes home to see Dylan and Kelly intimately talking and draws the wrong conclusions. Dylan tells David he didn't see anything. So David says he wants to talk about himself and Gina, specifically that he is into her. Dylan suggests that he wait to ask her out for Gina's sake. David makes a dumb face, which you can see in the visual aids. David is like, are you cool with it or not? But Dylan firmly tells him to do whatever he wants to do and then brings Kelly a cup of tea and says she wouldn't have been assaulted if he hadn't asked her to come meet him. Like, how does that help? It doesn't. Don't bring it up. Think it privately. Tell it to someone else once she, you know, clears you to break her confidence, or just don't mention her name. Oh, wait, you don't have any friends that aren't in the gang. Never mind. but she says it's no one's fault, or at least that's what everyone keeps telling her. And back at the same ancient ice rink where Trisha skated back in season 3, Gina or her equally gorgeous haired stunt double practices while David watches supportively. He is very confident that she'll make the cut on the ice skating tour, though he then admits that he doesn't know anything about the sport and asks her to dinner to explain it to him. When she asks him for clarification of what he's asking, he stammers that it's not a date. She doesn't have time. They have soul coughing tickets tonight. LOL. Anyway, she says she'd love to have dinner, but she doesn't know if she's ready for any of that, meaning romance, I guess. David tells her that if it's about Dylan, he and Dylan talked and Dylan said he was fine with it. And apparently he said the magic words. Clip 10.
You had a conversation with Dylan about going to dinner with me?
No, not about specifically taking you out to dinner, just, you know, the whole thing in general. And I mean, he said he was cool.
He said it was cool.
That's what he said.
You know what, David? I'd love to have dinner with you.
Spite date.
Sure.
David will take it. Kelly, the cut on her lip and another all gray outfit are at the Peach Pit when Donna finds her to make sure they're okay and have the how many dudes you fucked conversation we already discussed. Dylan then shows up to tell Kelly they're late, at which Kelly announces to Donna that she's having the locks changed because her purse was stolen. On their way out, Dylan tells Kelly that eventually she'll have to tell her friends what happened, which no, she won't. That's her choice. She doesn't have to tell anyone anything she doesn't want to. Shut up, Dylan. And she says she's not ready. In an interrogation room, Matt gets Joe's very gritty story in clip 11.
So run the details by me again.
Okay. I buy 15 rocks a day, but I only sell 10 in order to keep up my own habit. You with me so far?
Your crack habit, yeah.
Right. So around 2 a.m., I'm about to sell out my quota. This one guy, he's all strung out, plus, you know, shy the cash.
So he shows you his boombox.
I mean, CD, tape deck, equalizer, subwoofer. Tells me it's his brother's.
And you believe them?
Look, I know you got me down for low rent, but I am telling you, this guy was sick.
So you trade the crack for the stereo. That's real humanitarian.
Look, I never said I was an angel, but on this deal, I am innocent.
Where'd the police make the bust?
My apartment. Why?
First of all...
Okay.
Your crack habit. No, shithead. His geology habit. What kind of crappy lawyers is Hamilton non-law turning out? Second of all, I have some biographical information on the actor playing Joe Patch.
Please.
His name is Cliff Dorfman. I regret to inform everyone that he was a staff writer on Entourage, but he was also in two other episodes of 90210 before this arc, including the Halloween one where Kelly almost gets assaulted by that mullety cowboy dude, except he didn't play the mullety cowboy dude, I don't think.
Right. No, I don't think so either.
He's also played a cameraman in some other episode. Oh. Anyway, Cliff Dorfman, ladies and germs, like, I don't really understand the whole, like, like felony violent swingers rat-a-tat rat pack writing that he's getting throughout,
yeah,
including the, yeah, isn't it funny how I'm stealing shit off Matt's desk, like, all right,
yeah,
check the trash, there might be some pizza.
So then we see Kelly walking past the room with the detective on her way to look at mug books. It's an actually, for this show, pretty cool shot. Like, Matt moves out of the way. You can see the glass, and then Kelly is walking past it. You can see in the visual aids I made a GIF. So, yeah, she walks past the room with the detective on her way to look at mug books in, and they have this discussion, clip 12.
So I can use a pseudonym.
We'll protect you as much as possible.
Yeah, and when he's caught?
Well, at the trial, you will have to see him.
Why?
He has the right to face his accuser.
I can't believe he has any rights after what he did. Really?
Multiple arrestee says what?
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, like, I'm not happy about what this guy did either, but, like, you can't just... That's a very fascist statement to make, particularly for Dylan.
Yeah. It's called Deprocess, Richie. Also, get a haircut.
Yeah. Anyway, the cop gives Kelly the mug book and directs her to a room where she can look at it. And to Kelly's question, she admits they don't have any leads. So after their dinner, David has brought Gina back to his house where her very recent ex lives to get their show tickets. Like, I don't know, wait in the car, just saying, but whatever. Of course, Dylan is there telling her it's not a good time. She admits she assumes that he has brought home another one night wonder. But then just as David emerges with the tickets, Kelly comes out of Dylan's room. Gina disgustedly says they deserve each other. And when she and David have left, Kelly tells Dylan that she wants to go home. So then we next see her in the living room in fresh depression wear when she hears a key in the lock and calls out for Donna. It's not her since she's in her room baby talking to Wayne. So Kelly goes to the door and opens it for Matt, who says his key didn't work. She tells him about changing the locks and says she'll get him a new one. He thought she said she only lost her wallet, but she says it was her purse, which she left at the Peach Pit in this version of the story. He would also like to know what happened to her lip, and she says Aaron hit her. And he comments that she's shaking. She says she's just cold. He offers to take care of that sexfully, but she is not into it. And when she tries to explain
Ever,
that it's not...
but especially not right now.
Yeah. When she tries to explain it's not him, he immediately gets snitty, assuming it's about Dylan. And honestly, why shouldn't he at this point? Yeah. But it's still pretty ugly to watch, knowing what we know and he doesn't, in clip 13.
Don't do this, okay?
Do what? Ask where you were last night when your wallet, no, wait, your purse was left, I'm sorry, stolen at the Peach Pit before you babysat for Aaron at your mom's?
Matt!
Now, look, I don't want to ask you, it's you making me ask you this. Were you with Dylan last night? Yes or no?
I think that you should go.
Happy to.
Ugh. I mean... just on general principles, yeah, you should go and you should stay gone because even prior to this, you don't like each other.
Mm-hmm.
She treats you like shit. And even though she wasn't technically cheating on you, you clearly haven't forgiven her and maybe shouldn't. So get to step in.
Yeah, you already didn't trust her. That's why she can't tell you the truth. So,
yeah,
like this is all bad. The next day, Dylan wakes up to find Matt creepily waiting for him in Dylan's living room, having already sorted through his mail. Matt demands to know what's going on with Dylan and Kelly. Dylan claims nothing is, but doesn't really help himself by vaguely saying that he and Kelly weren't together the other night in the way that Matt thinks, like, they weren't together at all. But then Matt's all, she's a good person, don't take advantage of it. And Dylan says he'll try not to. And the fact that a woman's trauma is being used as fodder for the 800th iteration of this fight between two men is infuriating and gross. So let's move on to Gina back at the rink with David, berating herself for staying out so late at the show the night before because now she doesn't think she's alert enough to make the cut for the show. Two shows in that. She was out at the Soul Coughing show, which we didn't see, I assume, because it was cut for this version of the episode's availability.
Also, there's no other band that you could drop into her storyline. Soul Coughing is a euphemism for throwing up. Why?
What? I didn't know that.
Oh, really? Oh,
no,
yeah.
That makes sense. But yikes. Wow. Oof. Anyway.
Cool. Cool, talent booker. Very yeah. Cool. Oh, cool.
So David tries to take some of the blame since his fuck up with the tickets was why she saw Dylan and Kelly together. But Gina blurts that she hates to lose and he doesn't get it. She doesn't have time to explain. So then Kelly is alone in the store when a dude comes in and starts innocently shopping. And she keeps stealing glances at him over her shoulder, ultimately deciding she can't handle it and telling him they're closing. He says it's barely 11 o'clock, so she says they're about to start their annual inventory. And he decides not to fight it and leaves. Another satisfied customer of now wear this. So then Kelly takes her bag and the phone into a dressing room and calls Rain. And the operator is calm and draws her out. So another more good advertising for Rain. Good job, show. Dylan then stalks Gina into the Peach Pit after seeing her car in the parking lot. She ignores him and asks Nat for the check, but Dylan sits anyway and asks her about the competition. She tells him to ask Kelly, since she hasn't been home for 3 nights, so she assumed Dylan and Kelly were hanging out, naming the kids. He makes a piss face and gives her a very careworn response in clip 14.
I've been doing you a favor.
Well, thanks.
You don't want to be with me? I'm poison. People around me die.
Well, that's such an old story, Dylan.
There's always a new twist.
Will you do me a favor? Will you stop breaking up with me? It just makes me feel worse.
That's a really good line.
That's a really good line, because that's totally what he's doing. He keeps like happening by, leaning in a doorway, stick insectily, and being like, you don't want to be with me. And she's like, well, I do, but you don't care about me. So why don't you just leave me alone then?
Yeah.
He sucks.
He very much does. So then, Donna comes home from her own dumb drama to find Kelly crying in bed and finally notices that something is seriously wrong with her very best friend, whereupon Kelly tells her about her assault. So then Matt is haranguing the prosecutor about the video proof he has uncovered that the cops didn't have exigent circumstances to search Joe's apartment. This is what he discovered after Steve pointed out the CC camera in the lobby at the building. He plays the tape, pointing out that Joe was carrying a plastic bag, not a stolen stereo, and so the police filed a false report, therefore had no legal right to enter Joe's apartment. Matt gives the prosecutor a bill of release and leaves him hilariously muttering him to himself, I made a gif of this because the prosecutor actor is making such a meal of it. Like, good for you. Make your own fun. God bless.
I know that he's like bested by Matt Durning.
I know.
No.
But just because Matt is a forceful advocate, LOL, doesn't mean he thinks that Joe is innocent and orders him to return the silver pen he just stole off Matt's desk and to pay him in full. Joe tries to pay him with a stereo. Matt declines. Joe also returns the watch he stole off Matt's desk on his way out. And Joe then walks straight past the store downstairs as Kelly is hearing from Dylan that there's been no progress on her case because Kelly's description of the perp keeps changing. Why the detective is talking to Dylan and not Kelly, I don't know, but fine, I guess.
Journalism.
Sure. Dylan is hopeful that in a few days, the guy's face will come back to her, but Kelly doesn't want it to. And just then, Matt enters to say he's sorry for doubting them. When Dylan leaves, Matt asks if he and Kelly are okay now, and she does not have an answer. Then, Dylan shows up at the skating auditions, which are apparently open to the public. David thinks it's nice of Dylan to have come to show Gina some moral support. Dylan picks up on David's testiness, and David wants to know if he asked Dylan as a friend to do something, would Dylan do it? Because David wants him to leave, and Dylan does. So then the announcer calls for Gina, who does not appear. David goes looking for her, and another skater runs out of the ladies' room saying that a girl just threw up in there and fainted, and surprise, it's still Gina. Still out cold, and David, the medical expert, like goes over to her and like jostles her head all around, like, you don't know what happened. Stop it. Oh,
Jesus Christ. Stabilize the neck, Lord Pissface. Come on.
Honestly. So then Noah calls Donna to try and make her see him, but she won't and can't tell him why, and he just gets pissier. When Donna brings her tea, Kelly worries that the rapist took her wallet so he knows where she lives. Donna exposits that the cops assigned extra patrols to the area, but Kelly isn't comforted by the thought that it was a random attack. Donna explains she means by bringing that up that it's unlikely the guy will try and target her again. Kelly also knows that if a crime hasn't been solved in 48 hours, it probably won't be solved. And for her, it's been 116 and a half. And apparently Kelly hasn't slept at all in that time. And then Dylan shows up.
That little detail was really moving, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, like going into this storyline again, it was like, I don't know if I can be not a bitch about it because of the way that Kelly has been written and acted this whole season and most of season 8, let's face it. But Jenny Garth is really killing it. And there was just something about that. She put in a teeny little pause and she's like, and a half.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, poor kid.
Yeah, so, she does job, really Jenny do Garth. A good job. For all the shit we give her, she's killing it here.
Yeah, when it was important, she brought it. So well done.
Yep. So then Dylan shows up to hand over an item she asked him to get her, a gun. Oh, good. This always ends well. Clip 15.
Cal, you don't need that.
Be careful. It's loaded.
Do you know what random means? No pattern or purpose. No meaning.
What happened to her could happen to anybody.
Just because it happened once doesn't mean it won't happen again. This time, I will be ready.
Take It Easy soundtrack. Yeah. Oh, my
also,
God.
Also, your toilet is running. Go catch it. Like, what was that little thing at the end?
Hey, all right. Well, at least this makes me confident that we'll be back in ridiculous territory next time.
Yes.
So for now, let's name our episode MVP. I'm going to break from tradition and say Jenny Garth for all the reasons we just said. She really acts the hell out of the storyline.
Agreed. Also, Rain.
Yeah.
Important resource. And once again, show notes if you need that or anyone you know needs that.
Very good. Least valuable player. Once again, leaving the rapist out of it, I'm going to say, oh, God. Dylan, leave Gina alone. She's trying to be broken up with you like you wanted.
Donna. Pay attention. And if you're going to, like, if you're going to make this into an actual issue, like, I don't know what to do. Casual sex with Wayne or the hoint Ophelia with Noah. Like, just pick something, anything. I don't care what.
Yeah. Let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
Shut up, Dylan.
Dave. My new
five
MVP
ways from this episode. Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Again, the hair. It's a problem. Bad.
It is dangerous to give a woman who has not slept in, you know, 3.5 hours and is suffering from trauma a gun that is loaded.
He's also bad to Gina and not respectful.
It's bad to get in someone's face about not showing up for your jonesing when you should have a sponsor and not put her in the position.
And it's dangerous even, or especially when you're in the midst of dealing with an ongoing criminal investigation, to make pronouncements about the judicial system in terms of who should and should not have rights.
Well, really.
And that makes five.
Sure does. Next time on Again With This. Hey, remember how the beginning of this tedious updo water torture sesh of a season had Brandon and Valerie in it?
Oh my God.
Well, we're finally at the end of the season, and here's what the season finale has in it. Gina confiding in Lord Pissface, Dylan searching for Kelly's attacker, another ill-advised Steve Bacchanal, and another ill-advised pairing of Kelly and firearms. And, finally, that Fountains of Wayne joke. Please file your ejaculations of protest at this so-called wordplay and at our visual aids to the ombudsman at our website. You can find that at againwiththis90210.com. And you can follow this podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I'm Subterranean Action Shot, Sarity Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Passive Aggressive Wine Glass Set, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Pistol Pack and Papa, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoony.
Shut up, Dylan.